Women for Justice and Strength and Sisterhood are both organizations comprised of ex-female prisoners. They work to promote the rights of federally sentenced women. Anne, Franny, and Heather, members of these organizations, were delegates to the Canadian Human Rights Commission Systemic Review in May 2003. They spoke to Phyllis Iverson about why they thought this process was important. They also spoke of some of the work they are doing in their home community.
Because it reflects the life of the women that are sitting in the federal penitentiary right now. That's why it's important.
Personally, I think that the Human Rights Commission, this whole thing is more important because we're getting a chance to network with other women's groups and to learn about, you know, the conditions in prison for women. But I'm a little bit cynical about the outcome of, or how this is actually going to affect anything. I'm just being honest here. All the women involved in this inquiry are very well-intentioned, passionate soldiers in the struggle for justice. But, unfortunately, I don't think that the Human Rights Commission has any real power to change the situation. That's why it's important that, you know, the people know what's going on, because it's going to be through public pressure that I personally believe it's going to happen.
All three of you were together at P4W. How has it changed since then?
I don't know. I've been out since 1989, and I first went in 73, and a lot has changed. Back then, the institution, there was less women, there was less problems. Our needs were being met. Maybe not to the extent we wanted or needed them to, but at least they were being met at some level. We were able to go out and get an education. We did have programs that met our needs, not programs that were forced on us, or not programs that were used as a privilege. Back then, it was just a little easier to do your time. You did your own time, and you weren't programmed into the way that CSC felt that you should be doing your time. Now, as far as the women in the male institutions, I don't know. That, to me, is beyond my... I can't even imagine going back to jail into a man's institution. I really can't. To me, it's just in left field. I don't know.
I couldn't even imagine going into a woman's institution at this point, because... there is no work programs, there is no university, no education, no anything, no services available. The only thing that they have is the one program for Aboriginal women who are maximum security and high needs women, and they all group these, you know, in the same category. And unfortunately, we don't bring it up, you know, in the conference or anything like that, but they also group sex offenders. Sex offenders, Aboriginal women, and maximum security equals high needs women. They group us all together. So they have now, if you're going into this, a maximum security, I guess, prison or a pod, or I call it a SHU unit, special handling unit, because basically that's what it is. It's not that legally, but you go in. And the only program that's available to you is a cognitive and behavioral modification program, dialectical behavior therapy. I have the manual, and it has the most incredible quotes from the woman who coined the therapy herself. Technically, the program is supposed to be in either a forensic healthcare unit or women on the street. And it's pretty controversial in itself. I think it's generally a bad program to begin with. But to take this really strange program and to put it into a punitive setting and not give these women any other alternatives except to be classified and diagnosed, quote-unquote, by CSC staff, untrained, unprofessionals. You're going in, you know, whatever circumstances brought you to prison, you're going in, say, as a lifer, as a maximum security, you do the first 2 years of your sentence, minimum. You go up for review every 2 years.
Damn.
You have to go through this program. And you're basically in this so-called pod, in a type of, I guess,
Administrative sick.
That's pretty wild, yeah.
Yeah. And you're stuck there, and you don't have any alternatives. You don't have any choices except to do this program in order to get out. So now you're classified as a woman with a mental disability because the CSC says that you have that, right? So you're put into this position. You're being punished, you know, for having this so-called disability. So if you're a schizophrenic, you're punished for it. You know, if you're like a borderline personality, whatever, you're punished for it. I mean, I remember coming into the system and being diagnosed as borderline personality disorder, and for the purposes of going to trial and to find out, like, why, you know, you do the things you do, just to kind of have a jury, right, to understand what brought you to this point. And then you go into the prison, and then you just do what you're supposed to do. You lose your liberties. You get, you know, work experience, and you get job experience, and you get education, you get whatever you can out of the system. You know, it's a la-di-da thing to make you a better person, which, you know, it doesn't. There's no rehabilitation. But now, you know, it's just, you go into this, and you're diagnosed by them, and then you're punished for that diagnosis, right? And you have no choices. There are no choices. You have to do it. So there's no work. There's no education. There's dialectic behavior therapy and psychosocial rehabilitation, and that's it.
And drugs. That's almost a cruel and unusual punishment right there.
It is. It's inhumane. And the drugs that go with it. And there's no looking at alternatives. And I come from a holistic viewpoint because of my training. So I see a lot of these symptoms, especially in myself, because I went on a website and I thought it was really interesting. I took this little test for borderline, you know, just a few questions. And I took it as I was at 19, scored very high. They told me to go and see somebody fast. And then I took it as I am now, right, at the time, 40, and it was like, there's nothing wrong with you, that, you know. So I think for me, it was just a matter of maturing, you know, and having to go through my own type of therapy to get to where I needed to be, but I needed to make that choice, and these women, they don't have a choice. So they're captors, and they're the guards. Are also their therapists. So they have to open up to their therapists, you know, who are the guards at the same time while they're being locked down. And it's a real mess.
You know what, I'm just going to say one little quote about that. Like, I think the person who said it best, ironically, was Lucy
McClung.
Like, I was reading in one of the CIS presentations, when they opened up the new MAX unit at Joliet, she opened up her opening remarks at that ceremony by saying that this new MAX unit, it's not a unit. This is her speaking. This is not a unit made of bricks and mortar. This is a program. She says it all, ironically, right? Because this is no longer a prison. This is like an aggressive program to go into your mind and change your behavior aggressively. You're not just put into prison behind these walls, denied your freedom. You actually have to jump through hoops while you're in there. And even if you don't really change, you know what I mean? You learn how to be very manipulative, how to be very cunning, and, you know, almost pathological, because the only way you're going to get out is to make it look like you've changed, you know? But that's all.
Yeah, doing their program.
Yeah, which is really not rehabilitative, to be forced to look like, you know, you're what they want
they're
you to
playing
be.
Playing a game.
Mm-hmm. They're playing a dangerous game.
Do you want to talk a bit about what Women for Justice is doing in Kingston?
It's funny, like I've been out like over 10 years, and I just really wasn't aware of the stuff that has changed, because I've really detached a lot from the system, even though I've stayed in touch with the women that I did do time with. Like, a few of them are living in Kingston that I do have contact with quite a bit. And how we came together on this is a lady, one of the ex-inmates, came over to my house and was telling me about the conference that she was at. And me, how I felt about the system was nobody gave a shit anyway, so why get involved? Who cares, you know? The bottom line, who gives a shit? So really, when I started becoming more aware of there was people in other groups and how they did care what was going on there, that's how I got involved, because like people really do care, and it's overpowering, really, when I think about it, because when I was doing time, there was really not the force of the groups that are out there now that have taken, picked it up and taken interest in it. But I don't know, like, it's just pretty beyond me. I'm shocked by all the stuff that's going on there. I don't even know much to say, but I know, say one thing, it's got to change. It's not right.
Yeah. And in Kingston, like right now, our little group, Women for Justice, like we're mainly ex-prisoners. And what we're trying to do, we decided we're going to try to raise money to buy a house ourselves, like our group, which would be a transition house for prisoners who are released on their expiry dates or on their mandatory supervision, you know, who fall through the cracks, who can't get into halfway houses, who've been denied parole, and often like are really highly institutionalized, you know, crime has been the only way to survive, right? And really have been so out of touch with society that you get out of prison, you have no ID, because when you went to jail, you had false ID. When you went into prison, there was no ATMs. And people like welfare workers and bank officials are more like guards to people when you get out of prison. All these people appear like authority figures, and so it's very hard to relate to them. Your language is different when you get out of prison, and you can't... You feel like an alien from another planet. Usually you've got tattoos because you're living in this totally different environment. So our idea is the women who are really going to have a super hard time adjusting, we'd like to have a transition house, which would subsidize their apartments within this house. They'd have their own apartment. They obviously are going to have a very difficult time getting a job, let alone enough money to survive. And we would like to have one person there 24/7, an ex-prisoner, employed just to be in the, like not in their apartments, but in the house, so that if they need any kind of assistance with opening a bank account, going to the welfare office, if they're having an addiction problem, they know that if they
come to us, we're going to help them, not turn them in.
Exactly.
It's prevention, you know. Like, that's what I find. When I got out, I turned to different aspects. Like, Ephraim helped me through a lot. There was a worker there that was really my counselor, actually. And she really helped me through a lot of stuff. And it's the little things when the women come out of jail. It's things that opening up a bank account, if they don't have sufficient ID, they're humiliated in the bank. They don't, like... I'll speak for myself. I didn't know how to open up an account. And I was so embarrassed when I went in there that, wow, I just wanted to go back to jail. You know, it's easy to get out. The struggle is staying out.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel if in that 3 months of coming out, you're going to break it or make it. And, you know, that's why it's so important that we get a transition house, because we have lived it. We have been there. We have been through it. We know what matters, you know, people take for granted every day are very important things to people that have been incarcerated for over a 2-year period of time.
One of the most common ways to be pulled back into prison is because you have a drug or alcohol problem. If you're in a halfway house and you have a drug problem, no matter how nice the staff are, if they notice it, they write it down, then they put you on piss tests, and before you know it, you're back in prison. So in the transition house, you know, if a woman is obviously having a lot of trouble because they're getting really wired, well, definitely we wouldn't call the cops. You know, we would say, there's a methadone clinic at such and such a place, why don't you go down there, and you can probably get on methadone pretty quickly, right?
We'll give her options to help her.
Yeah, we're not going to report them. And even if they are involved in something, you know.
That's the police job.
Yes. Our job is to help the women, and they will know that, and they'll be able to trust us, which is, you know, even though staff at the halfway house often mean well, they're still have to fulfill their job, and we and every prisoner in the halfway house knows it. You cannot confide in the, you know, on a deep level. You know, if you're really having problems, you really can't confide. You know what I mean? Like, if you have to go out and shoplift because you don't have any money, you can't say that to somebody at the halfway house. Or if you're getting into drug problems, you can't admit that to a person in the halfway house because you're, you know, your parole will be revoked.
And there's not a house like this anywhere else?
Not that I know of.
And these women, you know, are often having to start turning tricks or, you know, committing crimes to survive. And hopefully if they're in the transition house and they don't have to pay hardly any rent and they get help,
they
at least get a chance to adjust or decompress from being in prison. You know, and hopefully find meaning in life outside of prison, right? And have friends outside of prison, maybe. You know, it's going to be, that's what we're hoping
and
to
we
do.
And we need all the other groups involved. All we are is a transition house. All we are is trying to give the lady and the children the tools to reintegrate back into the community in a healthy way. You know, women need educations as far as, like, computers go, like, come on, it's the way of the world. Like, they ain't going away. And not just that, but they need to be, I don't know, they need self-esteem to begin with, you know. Mm-hmm. Things like that, their anger. Most of the women, that really, they've got issues they need to work through, but they don't need somebody pressuring them and telling them how to work through their stuff. They'll work through it, you know, when they're ready to. It's pretty wild. I'm just overwhelmed with it all, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I think a lot of people in society underestimate the mental abilities of women who are in prison. Like, most people, they know they've got... most people know if they're addicts, or they know if they're having trouble with, like, whatever, anger or whatever things, you know. And I think a lot of people in society look at women in prison as people who are like children that need to be... They're not respected for their potential, because most people in prison have had a very hard time, but they're not stupid. They've had a hard time, but they have just as much creativity and mental abilities as anyone else in society. So it's just really a matter of getting over some of the problems that started often when they were little.
So is there anything that either of you want to add?
Hi to the women inside.
Yeah.
That was Anne, Franny, and Heather. They were all delegates to the Canadian Human Rights Systemic Review looking into discrimination against women in prison in May 2003. For more information about Women for Justice, you can email women, W-O-M-Y-N, justice, J-U-S-T-I-C-E, at yahoo.ca. To send donations for their Transition House project, send to Women for Justice, care of the Kingston Credit Union, 18 Market Street, Kingston, Ontario.